Hey everyone, it's Pacific, and welcome to the first episode of Season 7. We're back, and we'll have new episodes for you every Thursday. To kick off our new season, we have a very special episode for you today. Today's episode is brought to you by Alone in the Dark, the highly anticipated and new reimagination from Pieces Interactive and THQ Nordic. Play as Edward Carnby or Emily Hartwood to explore your environment, fight monsters, solve puzzles, and uncover the true secret of Dorsetto Manor. Our favorite heroes are brought to life by Hollywood stars Jodie Comer of Killing Eve and David Harbour of Stranger Things, who lend not only their voices, but their appearance and their formidable acting skills to the brave protagonists. Experience a deep psychological story that goes beyond the realm of the imaginable, all dreamed up by Mikhail Hedberg, cult horror writer of Soma and Amnesia. The team at Pieces Interactive is supported by monster designer and legendary Guillermo del Toro collaborator, Guy Davis, as well as Doom jazz legend, Jason Conan, who provides his eerie and haunting melodies for the right atmosphere. Alone in the Dark is now available on PS5 and Xbox Series X and S, and PC. Order your copy now and escape into the dark. I'm incredibly excited to dive into this game, and we were fortunate enough to bring you a glimpse of the horror that awaits in Alone in the Dark. So, sit back, relax, and enjoy this week's episode.
Warning, the Foundation database is classified. Unauthorized access will result in detainment. Within this archive, you'll find the procedures, descriptions, and accounts of the most notorious anomalies we've encountered to date. Secure, contain, protect.
Journal of Mr. Michael Hackworth, Junior Specialist of Metaphysical Esoterica for the American Secure Containment Initiative. September 15th, 1917. It seems you could not prevent me after all, Dr. Barlow. I've won. I've crossed at last into Louisiana. I admit I'm not relishing the thought of disembarking, for then I will have to find some alternate mode of transport. Or, failing all else, rely on my unable feet to get me to where such transport can be found. I do not know what awaits me, where I'm going, but I have faith it will be worth the long journey. September 17th, 1917. I have arrived at my destination. To be precise, I arrived last night. But the stink and the shaking of the automobile left me too nauseated to do more than seek a bed. I am thankful that the landlady has allowed me the use of her ground floor room, though I know she did so out of pity. In my sorry state, I did not think to hide my braces. It is my fault alone. I will have to tolerate the delicacy with which I am being treated with patience and grace. September 17th, 1917. Continued. Today has been both fruitful and puzzling. I met two men in town, both motorists, who recall making Edgar's acquaintance. Both have informed me that he made several inquiries to them about the nearby Dorsetto Manor, and that they refused him on all accounts. Neither was willing to elaborate on the nature of his interest, nor would they entertain my questions about the manor itself. When I repeated my inquiries to Mrs. Fontenot, my landlady, she grew quite agitated and insisted that Dorsetto is, Not a place for the infirm or irresolute. I did not appreciate the implication of her words, but I must admit, they've made me curious. Perhaps tomorrow will yield more answers. September 18th, 1917. Nothing makes for a looser tongue than liquor. The motorists may have known how to keep a secret, but the drunks do not. It seems the locals believe the Derceto Manor is cursed, and that the master of the house is succumbing to madness as a result. The cause seems to be lost to history. Each explanation I was given was as outlandish as the last. An act of arson by Union soldiers in 1862. A ritual sacrifice by foreign occultists in 1855. One man who told me with an appearance of earnest belief that the manor had built itself in 1818 without the aid of human hands. This list goes on in a similar fashion, and none of its entries seem likely to be responsible for the effects the building is said to have on its inhabitants. No. If there truly is something amiss with the Derceto Manor, I believe its roots remain undiscovered. September 20th, 1917. I have found Edgar's place of residence, though it would seem he has not made use of it for some time. It has been paid for through to the end of December, so has remained unlet since his departure. As per usual, the truth makes for the most potent avenue of persuasion. He's my friend and my colleague, and I am looking for him. These facts sufficed to gain me access to his belongings. I wish they had provided me more of a clue. More useful was the testimony of the landlord, Mr. Langley, who informed me that in July, Edgar was absent from his lodgings for more than a fortnight, only to return in a state of extreme agitation on the 1st of August. On the 5th of August, the tenant of a neighboring room reported smelling smoke, and a small fire was discovered in Edgar's accommodations. He was not present within, and has not been seen since. Any evidence left by the fire has long since been disposed of, but I don't need it to know what this means. Edgar's burned his notes. Were Dr. Barlow here, I have no doubt he would tell me this is a product of Edgar's mental infirmity. I do not agree. Though Edgar's time in the asylum may make him a lunatic in the eyes of the law, I have never found him to be delusional. He is sensitive and prone to nervous fits, but it is the circumstances of reality which unnerve him, not the phantoms of a fevered imagination. No, I am increasingly convinced of the validity of his original pursuit. There is something strange at work here, something which merits the attention of the ASCI. I only wish he had brought me with him from the beginning. September 20th, 1917. Continued. I find myself at a crossroads. The man who transported Edgar to Derceto has approached me. He says he will bring me to the manor in the morning and return for me again in the evening. There is no time for indecision. If I aim to have the full support of the ASCI, I must make my case to Dr. Barlow, though he will no doubt use the war in Europe as an excuse to refuse me. If I forego this fruitless correspondence and attempt the investigation on my own, I may find myself unshackled by the limitations of my unable body. It is a decision lacking an obvious answer, but one I cannot afford to leave undecided for long. With every passing day, my chances of finding Edgar and discovering the truth of what he was seeking here lessen. If I were still well, No, I would not be here if I were well. I would be serving my country abroad, like so many of my colleagues. Dr. Barlow thinks I am naive for resenting that I cannot volunteer or be registered for selective service. I think he is a coward. Much too glad to be well over 30 and too little interested in ensuring the well-being of his colleagues. He may call me naive. I will not be disturbed by the opinions of someone who has proven himself both unpatriotic and disloyal. September 21st, 1917. Must remember to strike through last entry. Dr. Barlow cannot see it. Pursuing Edgar on my own. Automobile making me terribly ill. Will write more when arrived at Tercero. September 21st, 1917. Continued. Those infernal things ought to be made illegal. Never mind those they run up against or over. They make a victim of those who ride inside them just the same. I have arrived at the Derceto Manor. It has defied my expectations. The way the locals spoke of it prepared me for something little better than an overgrown tomb. The Derceto is a handsome building, massive in the way these southern manor houses always are, and well-maintained. Not a place I would assume to be the subject of a curse, though history has proven time and time again that looks may be deceiving. Perhaps my opinion will change once I have glimpsed the interior. September 21st, 1917. Continued. I have been informed by the butler that Mr. is currently indisposed and unable to receive visitors. Still, the trip has not been in vain. I have confirmation now that for those weeks in July during which he did not make use of his room at the boarding house, Edgar was received as a guest here. The butler claims to have never had cause to exchange more than a few words with Edgar, but says he often spent evenings engaged in deep conversation with Mr. I will have to return when the gentleman is well. I will admit, I'm not heartened to learn that Edgar did not return here when he left his lodgings a second time. If Mr. does not have a clue to his whereabouts, I may never discover where his path has taken him. September 22nd, 1917. I am being punished for my hubris. I felt ill when I returned to the boarding house in the evening, but told myself it was only the effects of the automobile. It is morning now, and I am worse than ever. Exhaustion clouds my thoughts and makes my body leaden. It is all I can do to sit up and write. I would sleep, but I cannot. For when I lay still, I can focus on nothing but the aching of my legs. I had deceived myself into believing my condition was improving, and succeeded only in making myself an invalid once again. I must write to Dr. Barlow. But not now. Even holding this pen is becoming too taxing to bear. September 23rd, 1917. Mrs. Fontenot has discovered my ailment and insists I am not to leave my bed, though I feel somewhat improved since yesterday. She tells me that I will not recover if I do not continue to rest, and while I know in my mind that she is correct, I do think I hate her for it. She is returning. I must get to bed. September 24th, 1917. I finally understand you, Edgar. I am sorry I did not before. When you told me of your dreams, I may not have dismissed them like Dr. Barlow had, but I admit I did not understand their significance. Last night, I had a dream much like those you told me about so many months ago. It was a dream that felt too much like reality. I dreamt I woke and rose from my bed, meaning to take the opportunity to move freely about the boarding house without Mrs. Fontenot's objections. But when I opened the door to the hallway, I found myself instead returned to the interior of the Derceto Manor. Dreams being how they are, I did not question it in the moment, only noted that it was much darker and colder than I remembered it being, and that the air was heavy with the scent of vegetal decay. I saw you there, Edgar. You were silhouetted against the window, your back towards the dark of night. When I reached you, I found that you were on the other side of the glass. You were trying to speak to me, but I could not hear you. Your face was livid with fear. I awoke this morning with a terrible feeling of premonition. I suddenly find myself wondering whether the butler was not entirely honest with me. I must return to Derceto as soon as possible. September 26, 1917. I have finally found my way back to the manor. Mrs. Fontenot would not hear of it, and so I was forced to abandon my lodgings and pass the time until morning in Edgar's. I'm thankful to have escaped her clutches before we received the storm warning, where she may have seen fit to lash me to the bed for my own safety. It is true that I am not entirely recovered, but I have learned by now that my recovery may never be entire, and that it is folly to wait for what may never come. I did not have the opportunity to examine the grounds of the Derceto Manor during my last visit. I think it would be prudent of me to do so now, before I make the staff aware of my presence. They're busy preparing for the coming storm. I can only hope this will allow me to pass undetected among them, despite my slow and graceless movements. September 26, 1917. Continued. I would never make a spy. I'd barely found my way around the side of the building when I was confronted by a gardener who mistook me for a thief. The butler has cleared my name, though not without some meaningful glances in my direction. I have been informed that I must stay the night due to the inclement weather. This suits my purposes entirely, and I am disinclined to complain. Less favorable is the news that Mr. is still unable to see me. I do not know if it is a lingering effect of that dream, but I cannot help but read signs of deception in the faces of all those around me. It may be nothing. I'm weary and irritable after the excitement of the day. September 27th, 1917. I do not think I was given a room on the second floor out of malice. This is the price of my deception. If I wish to be treated as a well man, I must accept the cost of seeming to be well. The hurricane still has yet to arrive, and so the whole of the household is in a state of suspense. I am told I may not leave until it has passed us by. I am too distracted today to write well. Last night brought more nightmares, all of them featuring Edgar. And in all, he was beyond my reach. There is a spitefulness to them, but I cannot discern whether its source is my own guilt at having wasted so many days in indolency, or something external to my mind. September 27th, 1917. Continued. It is not my mind. The butler startled when I mentioned my affliction to him, and looked discomfited by my insistence that the dreams had only begun after my initial visit to the manor. He knows more than he is willing to let on. That much is obvious. September 28th, 1917. There is a man in my dreams. Not Edgar. A man I do not know. A dark figure, watching me from afar. I think he is the key to this. It was him who called to Edgar in his dreams. But what is the source of his presence here? And how do I find him when I'm awake? I am convinced now that Edgar did return here, though I do not know what cause the butler had to deceive me. Perhaps he did not know Edgar had returned to the manor. But how could he have not? How could a man have gone so long undetected in this manner? I am left with more questions by the hour, and it is not yet dawn. I do not think I will be able to sleep again tonight. September 28th, 1917. Continued. The storm still threatens, but has not yet made landfall. It holds us in suspense like a stage magician might. My fitful sleep these past two nights has cost me. I am too fatigued to even think of leaving, and did not understand why the servant who told me I must stay yet another night looked so sorry about it. I caught a glimpse of the man I believe to be Mr. this morning as I descended the stairs in search of the kitchen. He fled at the sight of me. For obvious reasons, I could not pursue. I do not think he is ill. Perhaps the rumors were not without their merit. It may be madness which afflicts him after all. September 28th, 1917. Continued. I have dreamt while I was waking, and it was not a dream at all. In my dreams, I walk freely, without pain and without need for my braces, like I did years ago. When I stepped from one room to the next to find myself in sudden darkness and knee-high, fetid water, it had all the qualities of a dream. The sudden change of location, the palpable shift in tone. And when I saw something moving beneath the surface of the pool, I thought I must be dreaming of an alligator. It was not an alligator, and when its teeth closed around me, I knew that it was not a dream. It is rare for me to be grateful for my own infirmity, but were it not for the metal rods in my braces, I suspect the creature would have torn my leg from my body in its effort to drag me beneath the water. Instead, I was left clinging to the banister, bruised, bleeding, but alive. The trip up the stairs was made somehow more harrowing by the fact that beneath one agonizing footfall and the next, I found myself back in the derceto of the waking world, and became the subject of a frenzy due to the trail of blood I had left in my wake. There is no more deceiving the butler or the staff about my condition. They have informed me that meals will be brought to me, and that I am not to exert myself upon the stairs without assistance. It is curious that no suggestion has been made to move me to the ground floor. September 29th, 1917. The storm has passed us by and turns now towards the coast of Florida. I would not have realized if I had not been told. It is often raining in the other version of the Derceto, and sometimes the water pours through rotted gaps in the ceiling not present in waking reality. These shifts in perspective have been occurring more and more frequently over the course of the past 24 hours. I find myself sometimes unable to determine when I am awake or asleep, except by the presence of my braces. The dark figure which lured Edgar here watches me often now, and not always from so great a distance. I often hear Edgar calling out to me from the depths of the manor, though I cannot make sense of his words. I woke, or returned once, to discover Mr. looking in on me from the doorway to my room. But when I tried to speak to him, his gaze fixed on a place beyond me, and his face became a mask of fright. He may be mad, but I believe ever more resolutely that it is a madness which has been foisted upon him by some malevolent entity present within this manor. There is a character to his eyes, which reminds me of Edgar. The look of a man who is sensitive, but not lacking in the faculties of reason. I am sure I would have found him good company had I met him under more favorable conditions. Or perhaps it is only that I wish to see Edgar in him, as I have been unable to find the man I came here seeking. And his absence taunts me. September 30th, 1917. I tried to speak to Mr. this morning, only to turn a corner and find myself returned to the other Derceto. If only it had been the reverse. I have still not determined whether those who tread these two realities persist in the one while perceiving themselves to be in the other. Did I vanish from the hall during my pursuit of Mr. Where am I standing there, leaned up against the wall for all to see? If I were to climb through a hole in the floor or wall of the Derceto, which does not exist in our waking reality, what would happen? Would those watching me perceive me as phasing through the wallpaper? Or would I return to discover my body pressed up against a solid obstacle? Would I return to find myself bisected by brick and wood, were I in the midst of such a passage when the change happened? There are so many questions in need of answers. I can only... September 30th, 1917. Continued. A beast leapt out at me while I was making my notes, and I was forced to flee as fast as my injury and infirmity would allow. I have escaped unharmed, but my wound is reopened, and I know without evidence that when I awaken tomorrow, it will be in a state of exhaustion and with a body racked by aches. I know that I should leave this place as soon as is possible. When I am ill, I will make too easy a victim for these monsters. And I have made no progress in identifying the dark figure which I believe to be the cause of these events. Nor have I been able to discover Edgar's whereabouts within the manor. But I do not know that I could leave, even if I wished to. I suspect any attempt I might make to descend the stairs towards the door might find me once again submerged in knee-high, fetid water. And even if I could find my way out of this accursed manor, my legs would not permit me the long walk back to town, and I have no reason to believe the butler would be willing to furnish me with transportation. He has made no mention of my leaving, despite how long I have imposed upon Mr. hospitality. October 1st, 1917. I hear Edgar calling me, even while present in the Derceto of our reality now. The dark figure which resides here is taunting me. I glimpse his face in the window, and in the darkest corners of the room. While alone, I still feel that I am being watched. So this is what it feels like to become a madman. October 2nd, or 3rd, 1917. Something crawled across my ceiling today. I was too weak to even attempt escape. It was only by chance that it did not devour me. The staff have begun to leave my meals outside the door rather than bring them in. I think I have been raving, though I do not remember it. October, 1917. I must write this before the last of my wits abandon me. Edgar, I do not regret following you here. I only regret you didn't bring me with you from the start. If it had been the both of us, perhaps we could have found our way out of this terrible place. Instead, I find myself praying that you are dead, for the alternative is too terrible to bear. If you are dead, Edgar, I hope we will meet in heaven. Dr. Barlow, if by chance you have seen fit to pursue me on my journey as I did Edgar on his, and if you discover this journal, I wish you to know two things. The first is that I have never held a man in higher contempt than I do you. You are my superior only in station. Never have I met a man so bereft of curiosity, compassion, or sense. The second is that you must leave this place as quickly as you are able. Even a fool deserves a better fate than this. Leave the Derceto Manor, and if you can, leave it in ashes.
Thanks for listening to this week's special episode. If you enjoyed it, be sure to pick up Alone in the Dark. It's available now on PS5, Xbox Series X and S, and PC. SCP Archives was created by Pacific S. Obadiah and John Grills. Alone in the Dark was written by Cale Brown. Narrator was Giancarlo Herrera. Our theme song was done by Matt Roy Berger. This week, I was your sound designer, Pacific S. Obadiah, and our showrunner was Daisy McNamara. Our executive producers are Tom Owen and Brad Miska, and this is a Bloody FM show. For more information, visit scparchives.com.